Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Join me as I seek out the small incremental changes being applied in other industries that we can learn from and that can be applied in healthcare. Can these changes bring immediate value, but also add up to the big improvements and revolution we need in healthcare? Come along with me to explore the possibilities. My innovative guests from around the globe have used small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. And today, I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Bill DePazzo. He is the Chief Medical Officer for Twistle, and this is a follow-up conversation to our conversation from last week with the CEO, Kulmeet Singh. Bill, thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So you're a internal medicine physician, a pulmonary and critical care sleep physician. Tell us a little bit about your background and what got you to this point.
Yeah, well, thanks. So I started out my career actually in public health. I worked for the City of Chicago Department of Public Health. And so I've always been interested in the bigger picture in medicine and the delivery of healthcare, not just the practice of clinical medicine. So throughout my career since then, I've been mostly in clinical medicine, but in a variety of settings, public, private, academic, large and small institutions. And throughout all of that, I was always struck by the commonalities among the patients we treated and their needs. And it predominantly evolved around communication. And although we often knew what to do and when to do it, we didn't always know how to get our patients to do it because we didn't always have all the tools we needed to communicate to people. And so my passion in all of this has been around what I'll call the last mile of clinical medicine, and that is getting patients to do what they need to do, want to do, and wish to do, because that's where we affect an outcome. So that's the thread of my passion throughout my career. And in 2015, having also spent a lot of time in administrative aspects of healthcare delivery and process improvement and innovation in healthcare delivery, I decided to retire from my clinical practice and met Kulmeet Singh, the CEO of Twistle, who had, with his founders, innovated a technological solution to some of the communication and connecting that last mile. And I became fascinated by that and had been working with him part-time for a number of years. And almost a year ago now, came on full-time because I saw it as an opportunity to fulfill some of my passions.
So when you talk about that last mile, I mean, I think people understand that differently, depending on your perspective. And, one of the things that I heard you say was getting people to do the things that we know they should do, but they don't. I mean, it's, this poor choice. And oftentimes it's not so much that they didn't know, but they just don't follow instructions. How do you tease out those two elements as you sort of think about this? Because to me, they're two different problems, or do you see them as the same?
Nope, I agree with you totally. They are separate but highly correlated problems. So we have lots of people, doctors might be the best example of this, who know everything they need to know to do it.
But I'm glad you said that. I just want to say.
Oh, absolutely.
We absolutely know everything.
We have the worst. We have some of the worst compliance with medication rates of anybody. And yet, how could you have more knowledgeable people? So it is some of both. And you're correct. And I think our desire, what to accomplish with the platform, is a little bit of both. Obviously, getting commuting. So oftentimes, people don't follow the instructions that we think we gave them because we didn't really give them the instructions, or we didn't give them to them at the right time or in the right context. So my original fascination with this platform was having been in sleep medicine, in a field that requires a tremendous amount of information in order to do all the things you need to do, even if you're motivated, is about when to give that information. And we have historically given people 30-page booklets or given one-hour lectures about everything they need to do without any context for the fact that this is only relevant a month or two from now, not now. So the timing, the quality, the timing of the information is as critical as anything. Now, on the other hand, we also have the situation, as you've mentioned, where we need to accomplish behavioral modification. things like weight loss, smoking cessation, exercise, et cetera. But that requires ongoing communication. And we like to think as doctors that I told you to lose weight. So when I see you back in a month and you didn't, why didn't you do that? When in fact, a more conversational approach outside of that office or given in a different context, in a different way, would have been more successful. You and I both know, having been in this field, that no one approach works to all people at all times. And so I think our focus is to try to hit the 80% mark of the people who 80% of whom need the information and will act on it, and 80% of people who might be nudged through some behavioral modification would have accomplished many goals. But they are separate issues, I would agree with you.
So as you think about this going back in time, part of me says that maybe it wasn't possible because, from a context and timing and amount of information, you didn't have the opportunity to give them a, 4x6 card or just a single sheet with, this is the focus for today, but tomorrow it's going to be this. We didn't have as many mechanisms. Did we have any successes in that process of delivery prior to the technology arriving, or has it been the aggregation of technology to the problem that has helped us overcome some of those challenges, do you think?
Very, very interesting. But I will tell you that I think the greatest match of Twistle with a provider is somebody who was doing it anyway, but it was costing them a fortune in their personal time, in their systems time, in their staff, et cetera. I've certainly worked with doctors who have connected every one of those dots and worked as hard as they possibly could to do this, or appropriately used other people in their practice to do this, ancillary staff, for lack of a better word. And then there are some who just didn't understand it, the need for it. If you look at providers who have sky-high patient satisfaction, they're doing many of the things we're automating now. They connect with patients in ways we're doing now. But if the percentage of us that had the energy to do that or had the resources to do that is dwindling. So in a way, what we're doing is guaranteeing that all providers have the opportunity to act that way under a reasonable cost structure, energy structure, personal cost structure to do that. So to answer your question, I believe that technology is allowing us to more consistently deliver messages that the best of the best have been doing all along, and it's augmenting that. It wasn't like it wasn't there before, and now it's there. It's just we're getting better and more consistent at it, and we're scaling up that best practice across the system.
It's interesting because what I get from that, and again, I sort of try and tease out these threads of what were the small steps, and my sort of premise was, this is the aggregation of technology, but I think what I'm clearly hearing is this is actually just using technology to automate what is going on in good practice, where you can see models of great behavior, and they've managed to essentially focus on those behavioral modifications, albeit maybe not at scale. But what you're saying is you can then scale that with the technology.
Yes. Yes. I've had the opportunity as a manager and an administrator in large health systems to understand that kind of variety, having looked at practices, looked at charts, evaluated patient satisfaction, et cetera. And we're automating what the best of the best out there are doing, and that's how we are establishing best practice, by looking at that, and then moving into the other two-thirds of us who either by variation in skill, if I could say it that way, variation in motivation, etc., are unable to provide that same level of service. We were not all created equal in terms of doing that. And I actually believe that if all we did was match what's currently best practice and generalize that, we would solve a lot of problems. Now, I think technology offers us the eventual opportunity, and in some ways a little bit now, to double or triple best practice, right? That's where things like AI come in, right? So, you know, best practice is a provider figures out very early on in the interaction whether the patient needs more information, less information, humor, no humor. Do they have subtle mental illness or emotional problems, social problems, et cetera? And I think technology will allow the best of the best, and then hopefully all of us, to understand that, tailor the communication and the motivational tools to that individual person, and then really consistently do it. Because again, the best of us do most of what we do the same most of the time. Like, that's the definition of a good doc, is that consistency. But within that, we sometimes miss that variation, right? I might think this is the best approach to this patient, and I made a mistake. Good technology would allow us to correct that. And there has been some research around messaging that says if you manage those things and self-correct, you have a better outcome.
For those of you just joining, I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and today I'm talking to Dr. Bill DePazzo. He is the Chief Medical Officer for Twistle, and we were just talking about the whole process of automation of essentially good practice. And Bill, you were just describing that customization feature, and that sort of lends itself to some of the technology. And I think one of the reasons that maybe you elected to join the company, and you know, we're intrigued by this whole Twistle concept, which is the way it works. So what is it that Twistle does from a clinical standpoint, and what was it that really excited you?
Yeah, again, as we've talked about, that consistent delivery of correct messages, correct time, the ability to do that is what attracted me. And the methodology that was being used in the technology in terms of the communication, the simple, you know, avatar of texting, was very attractive, because that's a methodology that's easy to use. You don't have to teach people how to do it. They're not complicated, et cetera. And so, you know, combining those two things is what excited me as an opportunity to fill a niche I was looking to fill other ways and didn't always pull off.
So help the listeners understand a little bit of how this works. And, you know, if you can, share a little bit of the sort of clinical background and the way in which you steered that behavior and how you're using that technology to sort of amplify what I, you know, heard you say, best practices of clinical teams.
Yeah. So what we want to do is look at their practice of what their standard practice is now, which quite honestly is often a challenge, because as I've said, we're not always good at understanding those steps within that process. And then constantly thinking about what information does the patient want or need or have to have at that point, and really distilling complicated things down to very, very critical steps. Because again, as a process person, it's easy for me to look at those steps and decide which one of those really matters. Do you have to ask 20 questions, or is one question going to get you the answer? And then thinking about the best way to say that. So from a clinical perspective, our words matter, and typically we have evaluated information given to us to put onto this platform that was grade 40, whatever that means in terms of educational level, and we're really shooting for grade 6, right, or grade 7, somewhere in that zone. So as a clinician, I'm often in the position of helping that translation into language that makes sense, having done a lot of it. And then thinking about what's the best method, because sometimes, just like we're doing now, talking face-to-face, a short 30-second selfie video unproduced from the provider gets by far the biggest bang for the buck. Some of our most effective videos was a cardiologist in a heart failure clinic describing a low salt diet to a patient in 15 to 20 seconds and waving his finger at the patient on the screen in a very kind of a, it was kind of an acute way, so to speak. at the patient at don't forget blah blah blah. And you know, it turns out that was a very effective step, and we're actually learning those kind of things and bringing those best practices back into our clients. And so you know, again, the what and the where and now the how of communication with the patient is important.
So focusing in on that, that's kind of interesting. So the video piece doesn't surprise me, but the fact that what is almost like a scolding kind of interaction with that clinician proved to be a positive experience. And, you know, certainly in some of the discussions I have with patient engagement folks and patients that are online, you know, this Wizard of Oz concept of the, you know, knowledge, all knowledgeable physician delivering information and issuing edicts,
yeah,
not desirable, but it sounds like in this instance that was. What were the parameters that made that sort of desirable?
Well, my response to people who say that isn't the way is they obviously haven't dealt with a third of people who want to be told exactly what to do. And that's our challenge. No, you right. Hit it right on, Nick. It's some people you lose unless you tell them what to do.
Yeah.
And some people you lose if you tell them what to do.
And understanding that difference is
right,
sort of critical.
Right.
And one of the things that, you know, is I think I certainly saw evidenced in some of the people that I highly respected that taught me in medicine and, you know, I looked up to as mentors and, you know, good models were the folks that could tell that. That wasn't always easy. It's a skill that's hard to teach, I think.
It is, but it is teachable. It is teachable.
So and if one it's of the teachable, things, that means technology can be taught it,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly. I believe that 80% of the time it's teachable. And I know this based on a lot of experience trying to help physicians go from a very low apparent patient satisfaction, because as you know, the statistics around that are kind of goofy, but from low patient satisfaction to high patient satisfaction. And my assessment in doing that was that physicians with very high patient satisfaction could self-correct, could make that assessment, more information, less information, humor, no humor, more time, less time, et cetera, could make that assessment in the very beginning. And if they made a mistake in that assessment, realize they made the mistake, self-correct before the patient left the office. Mm. There are two other kind of providers. There is the provider who doesn't understand how to do that, or doesn't understand the importance, or doesn't process it, but could be taught how to. And the patient is in there, they make a mistake, they use humor, it was the wrong thing to do. They didn't recognize that that was the wrong thing to do because of the patient's facial expression or whatever. And patients won't tell you this. And then they leave and they have a poor outcome. And then there's the third doc who doesn't, I'm going to say doesn't care, but I'm overstating that a little bit.
Understand.
He's either blind to it, blind to those issues, or completely doesn't understand their importance and can't recognize that they've made a bad choice in the way they do it. In other words, they just apply the same thing to everybody. Those are doctors we used to say in the old days had bad bedside manner, right? That was that classic. They had the whole package of mistakes, right?
Yeah.
So I really believe that's a small group of people. And that most of us never, this is not training we certainly went through in my era for sure.
Right.
We're a little better at doing it now, but quite honestly, we still don't hold those as high values. So I think understanding those variables, correcting those variables, and yes, machine learning could do that. In fact, there is an example of somebody who first did what we're doing with a text pager back in the early 80s to treat HIV patients. They were trying to get people on the 5-drug regimen that we all know was insane and very difficult to use. So they were basically had a study where they used text paging. But they had the opportunity, not with AI, but with reading the messages and getting feedback from the patients to tailor the messages, to introduce humor, to change things based on the patient's response. And they learned a very, very long time ago that that could be done with simple messaging, same thing, right? Messaging, but it wasn't automated.
Yeah.
With these patients. So imagine if we can just do that with AI. Now, we have the opportunity, and we're trying to figure out ways to do that with the tool, to look at the response to some of the messages we're sending. And if we get a poor response, can have an opportunity to tweak that message using, you know, rules-based things and manual oversight, or using trying to find ways to mine that texting, the open texting, the synchronous messaging, to find out where there's repetition and where there can be correction. But again, ultimately, doing that automatically and per patient is completely doable. The challenge there obviously is defining what the outcome is. Because you need an outcome in which to match machine learning and AI to. But that's, to me, it's super exciting, and I hope I'm around long enough to see that happen.
So in the last couple of minutes that we've got left, thinking about that specifically, I mean, that's the area that I find really intriguing, which is, you know, one of the things that I've heard repeatedly, and, you know, I quote somebody specifically around this, you know, technology has always been about augmenting human potential. That was Michael Dell said that. And in this instance, the augmentation is the capacity to learn from those and help those individuals in those groups that don't naturally do it. Is that something that you see happening in this platform?
Yes. I think the greatest value we will accumulate in this company is the intelligence we're learning about the methodologies of communication. There is not that kind of information out there yet. We are actually learning because of the vast amount of data we're collecting about the best way to talk to patients. And we'll be able to turn that around, whether that's technologically or verbally, and inform those of us who care a lot about this about what's the best way.
As you think about that, I hope maybe that will feed back into the educational process, and we might actually incorporate that into the curriculum for the medical students and the people that are now sort of emerging into this. Because as I look at it through the eyes of somebody that's going through it currently, it hasn't changed. From when I trained, it's the same thing, just with more data compressed in, but none of the elements that seem to be about knowledge processing.
Absolutely correct. And I think that'll be our greatest intellectual property, if I could say it that way. We'll be learning how to engage patients in these types of platforms, because they will become increasingly important. And what's the best way to keep them on those platforms once they do engage, because that's a common one as well, common problem as well. And then very specifically, it's all about the message.
Fantastic. So unfortunately, as usual, we've run out of time. So it just remains for me to thank you, Dr. Bill DePazzo, for joining me today. It's been a great pleasure. I'm really excited about this platform. I think there's fantastic opportunities for improving everything that we do. And communication is the sort of foundation of all of that. So thanks for joining me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me, Dr. Nick.
Thanks for joining me today. Do you have any better ideas, or have you found a small incremental change that's brought about a big improvement in your world? Let's continue the conversation on our hashtag, The Incrementalist, or share with me at DrNick1 on Twitter. You can find more information about the show on our program page at healthcarenowradio.com, and tune in next time to hear my discussions with leaders and innovators from around the globe who've revolutionized their space by using small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and I'm starting a revolution through evolution.